Okay, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me for this talk, and it's a great pleasure to be here. We all know that the neutrino mass is well established, and I will not give you a rundown of what has really been achieved, because many of the talks have already discussed that. On the other hand, what I would like to talk about is whether it is possible that the physics behind neutrino mass is a phenomenon which occurs at the TEV scale and not at the grand unification scale. Because if it is the latter, then of course we have hardly any way to test it. So I would like to sort of argue that it is quite plausible that the neutrino mass is a physics nearby, not too far. Okay. So there are, as you know, there are two issues in neutrino mass physics. One is, what is the scale of the physics? Where is the, at what scale does the neutrino mass come from? And the second part is, why are the neutrino mixing patterns so different from the quark mixings? And Muchen talked about it yesterday. So I will simply focus on the first one. So what is the situation? Well, when you look at the standard model, of course we know that all the charged fermion masses are now pretty much well understood from the discovery of the 125 GeV Higgs boson at LHC, okay, because the mass comes from some Yukawa coupling and the expectation value of the Higgs doublet, the neutral component of the Higgs doublet. And that pretty much tells you, we don't understand why they are the way they are, but at least we have a way to include the neutrino masses in the standard model. Okay. However, for neutrino, the situation is completely different. First of all, in the standard model by itself, the neutrino masses are zero. And at the least you have to do is to add a right-handed neutrino to the standard model, which is, of course, new physics. But if you use the Higgs boson as we used it for the charged fermions, then what you will get is a mass which is much too large for the neutrinos, unless the Yukawa coupling is extremely tiny, like something like 10 to the minus 12 or less, which is clearly uncomfortable. I mean, it could be that way, but it is so uncomfortable that people think probably there is some other kind of new physics associated with this mass in addition to just adding the right-handed neutrino. Okay, so that's what I want to discuss and to argue that maybe this is not too far from the TEV scale that we have this kind of a phenomenon. So the starting point of my discussion is the Weinberg effective operator, which you add to the standard model, which is this dimension 5 operator scaled by a mass m, which corresponds to the scale of the new physics. And if you give vacuum expectation values to these guys, then you get this formula. And of course, if lambda is 1, then you would expect this to be somewhere around 10 to the 14 GeV, which is much too high. But in any case, what this formula tells you is that since this is high-scale physics, we have a way to understand why the neutrino mass is so much smaller than the charged fermion masses. We just find what lambda is and find what m is, and then you have an understanding. The question is, what is the physics that is responsible for generating the mass m, and what could possibly be the value of this lambda? Okay. So to explore this, we have to seek ultraviolet completion of this kind of operator and try to look behind and see what can we find. So one of the ways that you start this ultraviolet completion process is something called the seesaw mechanism. What you do here is that you take the right-handed neutrino and add a Majorana mass to that, which of course being a singlet of the standard model could have any value. Okay, so what you have is a line like this. This is the left-handed neutrino. This is the Dirac mass right here when you give a wave to this Higgs boson. And then what you get is a formula like this. Okay. Now, of course, now you see that if this is of the order of the electron mass, which is what we are familiar with in the standard model anyway, then you could have the right-handed neutrino mass in the TEV scale and not necessarily at a much higher scale that you cannot reach it or test it at all. Okay. So that's the first point, but that's not the end of the story. Okay. Of course, that's not the only possibility. You could certainly write all kinds of other operators. For example, this is one operator, that's another one, which are higher than 6, higher than 5 dimensional operator that we wrote down before. And once you have these kind of operators in your game, then you could have a lower scale. Okay, you could even have TEV scale. There are many examples of such models. I have just a few citations here, but the list is huge. even though this possibly could be a TE vesicle, it's not clear whether it leads to other things that follow from the seesaw mechanism. And one of the other things that follow is a way to understand the origin of matter. Yeah. So what I'd like to discuss in this talk is just one version which we have been working on for a long time with the so-called TE vesicle left-right symmetric models for the neutrino mass and how it connects to the origin of matter. Okay. So please interrupt me in the middle when you want. So what is, why left-right symmetry is so compelling? So I'll have to show a couple of cartoons. For example, theory of relativity tells you that if you have a massive fermions, you necessarily need two helicities. And here is the cartoon, you just go faster than the speed of this particle and you flip helicity. So therefore you need two helicities to make a mass, okay, for a, of a fermion. Now, what was the belief? If you read the literature of the 60s and early 70s, what you find is the following belief, which was quite prevalent, which is that all the fermions participating in strong and electromagnetic forces have mass, that is, they have two helicity states, explaining possibly why these forces are parity invariant. Of course, this is not a one-to-one connection, it's just an intuitive feeling. Okay. On the other hand, because neutrino was believed to be massless and participated exclusively in weak interactions, that was considered as one way to understand why weak interactions violate parity. Because you don't need the other helicity to have neutrino mass, okay, because there is no neutrino mass. Okay, so there is only one helicity state, you have parity violation. That probably is why we observe V minus a structure of the weak decays. But now, of course, we have neutrino. We know that the neutrino is mass. So what that means is that we need the other helicity to make a mass. It could either be a second particle or it could be the antiparticle of the same guy. But in any case, the story is that you have two helicity states. Okay. So therefore, you could imagine, and probably this is a motivation, as to why one should consider the weak interaction to be on the same footing as the strong and electromagnetic interactions, which are both parity symmetric. Okay. So all the particles have mass, so therefore all should have some similar structure. And this is what I will explore, and this is what has been discussed in large number of papers over the last 30 years. So what is the left-right symmetric model? The model essentially is an extension of the standard model. You take the gauge group of SU12 cross U1, and then you extend it by putting in all the things that make the theory parity invariant. In other words, if you have the doublet of the SU2L, you have ULDL, but make the parity symmetric, so you have the right-handed guys in a symmetric doublet. But these now are doublets under the SU2R. Okay. And similarly, you come to the leptons, and you see the nu L E L is what is part of the standard model. But you make it parity symmetric, then you have nu R E R, and you see that for the first time, just from a consideration which has nothing to do with neutrino mass, you have suddenly the right-handed neutrino appearing, which you need to get the neutrino mass. Okay. So therefore, this is the version that you immediately suggest once you look at the parity symmetric extension of the standard model. Okay. Now, of course, once you have an additional gauge group, you have new gauge bosons which carry that force, and there are now in place of the just WL, you have got the right-handed Ws also, which arise immediately. So these guys coupling to the right-handed part of the current, which is the V plus A, and this is the V minus A, which we are all familiar with. And of course, the fact that the low-energy observed weak interactions have pure V minus A structure, or almost pure V minus A structure, is explained by the fact that the right-handed W has a heavier mass than the left-handed W. And people have looked at how heavy this should be. I will make some comments on that. And it's not too high. It's like in the 70s, it was thought to be maybe even 600-700 GeV, but now it is probably around 2 to 3 TeV. So that is the theory that I will explore and see what we get out of this as a way to understand the origin of neutrino mass and also how we can test it in various processes that can be accessible to experiments, low energy experiments. Well, in addition to just what I said, there are also several other attractive features of this model. For example, I just emphasized this point that it's a new way to understand parity violation weak interaction. But there are also other advantages of this formalism. One is that if you look at the standard model, the electric charge is given by Q equal to I3L plus Y over 2. And you don't know what Y is. I3L we know is the weak isospin. But Y we don't know. That's the hypercharge. You can assign any number that you want and you get a value for the electric charge. But that's not what is that may be an incomplete understanding. On the other hand, in the left-right models, all these quantities are physical in the sense that this is the left isospin, this is the right isospin, and then the U1 is nothing but the B minus L symmetry. Okay, so this is baryon number, lepton number. So once you know the weak isospin of different particles, left and right weak isospins, and the baryon and the lepton number, you know the electric charge. So you have no, in some sense, no freedom. You have a more tight-knit theory than you would explain. And of course, as I will discuss, this explains the small neutrino masses via the seesaw mechanism. And what is curious is that once you take this L violation, which is connected with the seesaw mechanism, and realize that this is B minus L and not L, then you also get a new phenomenon, which is known as the neutron-antineutron oscillation. I'll just touch on it a little bit because I probably will not have time to go into more details. And secondly, it can also explain the origin of matter. Okay, because this is the seesaw where the right-handed neutrino decays. It has no lepton number. So therefore, you can have final states with both kinds of lepton number, and then you get the origin of matter. Okay, so how do you really go about constructing? So I'm giving a little bit too much details maybe, but sort of interesting to just point out this because I will connect some of the phenomena, low energy phenomena, to some of these particles. Okay. So of course, in the standard model, we all know that there is just a single Higgs doublet. You can think of this one. But once you double it, once you go from left-handed to left-right symmetric model, these doublets also have to have their parity partner, and this guy is the parity partner. So this is, in some sense, the two Higgs model, but with much more constraint on their couplings. Okay, in the standard model extension, you have heard about many two Higgs doublet, three Higgs doublets models, and so on. The left-right has only two Higgs, and their couplings are connected because of the parity symmetry. Okay. Now, this is just one part of the story. Then there is, you need to break the B minus L because this guy has zero B minus L, so it cannot break the B minus L. You cannot get the standard model just by using this one. But once you want to break the B minus L to generate seesaw, what you will have, what we need is another multiplet, Higgs multiplet. So there is a proliferation, but not too much. That's what I will stop. Okay. So this is a Higgs multiplet which has got baryon minus B minus L equal to 2. So this is the following structure. There is a doubly charged Higgs boson. There are singly charged ones. These are all new particles that the LHC has been looking for. And then there is a neutral guy, which is what is important for us. So if you write down the Yukawa coupling for this, this phi gives mass to the fermions, the charged fermions. And this is the one, as we will see, has a wave which is in this neutral element. And that is what is responsible for the seesaw mechanism. Okay, so how does the seesaw mechanism arise in this model? Well, you start with the left-right symmetric gauge group, which is a larger gauge group than the standard model, obviously. And once you give a wave to the triplet, you break B minus L by 2 units. And that brings the standard, the left-right model down to the standard model. Okay. And at this stage, you generate the mass for the right-handed neutrino. So therefore, this mass, which goes into the seesaw mechanism, is connected to the existence of the parity-symmetric version. Okay. So this breaks the parity. Okay. So therefore, it's not something that is completely ad hoc you put in by hand. The mass is related to a new symmetry. Okay. So therefore, once you go through this procedure, what you find is a matrix for the neutrino and the heavy right-handed neutrino, which looks like this. And this is, of course, precisely the seesaw form. And once you diagonalize this matrix, it has got a light eigenvalue and it's got a heavy eigenvalue, and the heaviness is connected again to the mass scale that breaks the right-handed symmetry. And what I will, of course, assume is that this is in the TEV range. Okay. And there's nothing wrong with this being in the TEV range if you assume that this fellow is comparable to the electron mass of the standard model. Okay. So they're quite compatible and consistent. And therefore, the fact that it's in the TEV scale means this is a theory which you can test. Okay.
So what's kappa?
Oh, kappa is the vacuum expectation value of the doublet. Let me go through this right here.
How much latitude do you have to adjust that?
oh, this is bounded by the W boson mass, because that contributes to the domain. So that's completely fixed. Well, its value you don't know, but it cannot be arbitrarily large. Okay. But this one is the seesaw parameter. Okay. So that can be TEV, that can be gut scale, that you don't know. But what I'm arguing is that it is quite OK to assume it to be the TEV scale, which you can test. Okay. So it turns out that once you do the complete analysis of this theory, the neutrino mass has got two terms. One is, I put zero in over here, but if you do the new potential analysis of this Higgs boson complete thing, then what you find is that the left-handed triplet also has a vacuum expectation value, and this puts in a little entry over here, and that is also in the seesaw form like here. So the neutrino mass really has two terms. This is called type 2 seesaw, and this is called type 1 seesaw. Okay. So there are different models where either one dominates or both can dominate and so on, and each have their own characteristic predictions. And I will emphasize one particularly interesting case. Okay. Okay, so what are the other arguments that we have to stay in the TEV scale? I mean, here I'm just assuming, but there are also other arguments which say that it's better if you are in the TEV scale, you can do a lot more things, you can avoid some inconsistencies with cosmology and so on. Okay. So let me just run down them quickly. First, gut scale seesaw, which is of course a very large group of research going on that, is quite attractive but very hard to test. Okay. Now, of course, if you have supersymmetry, then even with high-scale seesaw, you could get some signals like mu to e gamma coming from the light TV-scale slepton masses. But of course, we don't know if supersymmetry is there or not. If it isn't there, then pretty much high-scale seesaw is not testable at all, okay? Because there is no other signal. The only signal with SUSY, you can get it. But as supersymmetry breaking keeps getting pushed higher and higher, these branching ratios go down and down. So pretty much, if you are in the TEV supersymmetry breaking scale, then you probably have no way to test the high-scale seesaw. Okay. The second issue is, if you have a supersymmetric seesaw, then it hinders leptogenesis in the following sense. There is something called a gravitino problem. In other words, as the universe heats up, you produce more gravitinos. And if you don't want to overclose the universe, you better have your reheat scale less than 10 to the 6 GeV. Because there are issues with BBN which come up because of that. So your TEV scale, you know, your reheat temperature of the universe with supersymmetric seesaw, it better be less than TEV scale. But this is not enough to do leptogenesis. Okay. In other words, you need a minimum of, in the high scale seesaw, you need a minimum, there is a bound which is somewhere around 10 to the 8 to 9 GeV. And this is way lower than that. Okay. So that's not so nice. Finally, there is an issue of naturalness, which some people have emphasized, which is that, of course, we are all concerned with naturalness and we being in supersymmetry to solve that problem. And what is the naturalness issue? Well, Higgs mass is 125 GeV, and why it is not 1 TeV or why it is not 10 TeV? Well, one way is to avoid that is to, or one way to understand that is to look at the Higgs self-energy. And as soon as there are new particles, there are new contributions to self-energy. Okay. So therefore, if you have a seesaw mechanism, then there is a new contribution to Higgs mass coming from the fact that the right-handed neutrino, and it is of course proportional to how heavy the right-handed neutrino mass is, okay? This contribution to the Higgs mass. And it turns out that if you keep it around 100 GeV for the Higgs mass, then this mass has to be bounded by something like 10 to the 7 GeV. So all of these arguments say, if you take them seriously, then it is better to have a lower scale seesaw than a gut scale seesaw. It doesn't tell you that it is TeV or 10 TeV, but it certainly argues against having a much higher scale than you would like to have. Reheat temperature means after the, you know, let's say inflation is finished, and then you start reheating the universe.
So that's a low inflation scale?
It is a lower inflation scale, and then you go up. You reheat. As you reheat, you...
But you're saying it has to be below 10 to the 6 GeV?
No. The gravitino bound is somewhere around 10 to the 8 GeV, but there are also, if you have a heavy gravitino, then it will decay and screw up Big Bang, BBN. Okay. So that is a problem. Yeah.
On the naturalist question, aren't you just delaying the question naturalist to the other scale, the Riemann-Zeller breaking scale?
This is just taking seesaw, and once you have seesaw, you see that it is LH nu R coupling. So therefore, it will start contributing the Higgs boson mass through this loop.
No, I'm just saying, but you solve the Higgs naturalness problem, but you have another naturalness problem for the other scale. Don't you just delay the question?
No, this is the naturalness scale I'm pointing out. I didn't quite get. Yeah, I mean, the point is, just to repeat, once you have the seesaw mechanism, you have a lepton Yukawa, lepton Higgs, and right-handed neutrino. Okay, and that contributes to the Higgs mass. So that better, that says that the right-handed neutrino mass better be less than 7, 10 to the 7, 8, 10 to the 8 GeV, and so on. So you don't, in other words, you don't want to have a higher scale seesaw than this value if you believe this argument. Okay, so once we have this theory, what is really the limit? I mean, how low can WR be? Because we are arguing for a lower scale right-handed W. So how low can it be? Well, there are all kinds of constraints which come from low energies, which will take me a long time to describe. So I just picked a few and put it in just two lines, which is, once you have the right-handed W, there is a new contribution to Kalong-Kershaw mass difference. Okay, and that because of the exchange of right-handed W and the left-handed W. And that, since we know this is well measured and very we know how this value is, you cannot allow a WR mass lower than 2.5 TeV. Similarly, there is epsilon, which gets the CP violating parameter epsilon, epsilon prime. Then you've got BS, BS bar. There are all kinds of rare processes which contribute, which get contribution from the right-handed W. And therefore, that puts a lower limit. Okay, so if you had just beta decay, of course, there are no conflicts there because it's a right-handed neutrino is a Majorana, heavy Majorana particle, so it never participates in the beta decay. But these kind of processes which do not have external leptonic final states, they contribute and you have a lower limit of 2.5 TeV or so. Now, LHC has looked for the right-handed W, right-handed neutrino, and this exotic particle, which is part of this game. And they have put also lower limits on that. The limit is somewhere around 2.8 to 3 TeV, depending on the right-handed neutrino masses. And I think I have a slide on that. Okay, so what happens is, the way to search for these kind of things is, you have the LHC, the quarks from the protons, they collide QQ bar and they produce the right-handed W if its mass is in the TeV range. And then that decays to a positron or a mu plus or whatever, and the corresponding right-handed neutrino over here. And that decays, and since it's a Majorana particle, it decays equally to positive and negative leptons, and it goes to two jets. Okay, so this is a very unique signal. WR goes to LL, JJ, like sign, unlike sign, both equal number. Okay, so this is a very clear signal, no missing energy, unlike the case of the dark matter where you have missing energy and so on, which makes things complicated. And you just look for this, and from that you can decide what is really the mass of the WR, how much you can tolerate and so on. There are, of course, other channels, like WR going to two jets. This, of course, the direct right-handed W coupling. It can also go to WZ, can also go to W and Higgs and so on. And all these are being searched for, and there are some limits which exist. And this is the current status, as far as I know, unless there is some update in the last few weeks. So it is something around 3 TeV. Okay, so people have looked for this kind of things and also this kind of final state as well as JJ and so on, and somewhere around 2.8 to 3 TeV. If you assume that the two couplings, gauge couplings, are equal. On the other hand, it is possible in these kind of theories that you have the two gauge couplings not equal. And for this case, in the 8 TeV data last year, there were some hints around 2 TeV in many different channels. Unfortunately, or I don't know what the latest situation is on the 13 TeV data, but there is certainly no big excitement on this, or whether they are looking in different ways and so on. But certainly this is yet to be confirmed by the 13 TeV. And maybe the 8 TeV also is not so sure right now. Okay, so that LHC is looking, and they can go up to almost 5 TeV for the right 100W mass. Okay. The other aspect of seesaw is that there is a heavy sterile neutrino, if you like, and the left neutrino, and the seesaw mixes them. Okay, so therefore, there are constraints. There are ways to look for the seesaw effects from the N and nu mixing. Okay. And then there are several discussions of this in the literature, and there are possibility that you can go up to. So these bounds are now very weak on this. It's nothing that will conflict with any model building issues so far. On the other hand, as we go to higher and higher energies, higher luminosity and so on, we are likely to push these contours a little bit farther. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind and something interesting. The other thing that happens in these models is a new contribution to neutron electric dipole moment, which is one of the main focus of this conference. So I just wanted to point out that because of the existence of the right-handed and left-handed W mixing, there is always a phase in those mixings. Okay? And that phase leads to new kind of operators which contribute to the electric dipole moment. For example, this is a typical graph. I'm not giving you all the graphs that are possible, but this is a typical graph where you have left guy here, right guy here, and then there is WL-WM mixing, there is a fermion mass in here, and there is a photon. Okay? So typically, these operators look like this. Then there is a second class of tree-level diagrams. We have WL-WR mixing, and there is a phase right here. So that gives rise to contribution to new operator contribution to neutron EDM, which looks like that. Okay? And this coefficient CLR is given by right-handed CKM, left-handed CKM, and this is the left-right mixing. Okay. So therefore, people have done extensive studies of this, and what they find is that this is the one that seems to dominate over that one, and that too, the long-distance contribution, where you have an effective NN pi CP violating vertex, and you look at this diagram into chiral perturbation theory and so on, and these people claim that if it is lower than 3 TeV, we have a conflict with the existing limit. So that puts a lower limit of somewhere around 3 TeV, 3-4 TeV. But the point, of course, is that this is a new contribution, and one should be alert to this kind of, once the neutron EDM is discovered, this is a possibility, okay, that one should think seriously about. The second thing that I want to mention is the Majorana neutrino means, of course, there is neutrinoless double beta decay. Okay. Now, I will spend a few slides on this because there has been a lot of discussion on this today. So there is a generic neutrino mass contribution which you have seen now many times. Okay. So this is the standard model seesaw with a heavier right-handed neutrino. But there could be new contributions from new physics. Okay. So therefore, double beta decay is actually a very sensitive observable for this kind of theories. You could tell quite a lot from that. So what is the story? Yes. So what we have, of course, is that the standard situation, you have the normal hierarchy, the inverted hierarchy, and these are the current limits, and you see the familiar diagram which you have seen many times now, which is this one. So you have inverted hierarchy, lower limit, you have the normal hierarchy which goes all the way down, and so on. So what is the impact of the left-right models on this? Well, the impact is quite significant. What happens is that once you go to these kind of minimal left-right models, there are several contributions which come up. Okay. So this is the one you saw in the morning in John Engelstock, and these are new contributions. There is a left-right, left-left with right-handed neutrino because of the mixings. There is a left-right contribution. There is a doubly charged Higgs boson contribution, etc. Okay. There is a whole bunch of new contributions which come up. And it turns out that if this scale of this new physics in the TeV range, then all of them contribute, okay? And all of them are observable. And here is an estimate of how big those contributions could be, assuming that the right-handed neutrino and right-handed W are in the few TeV range. I just, for illustration, I just put 1 TeV, and these are the kind of numbers. And you see the current expectation after this, the estimate is for this bold-faced contribution. Okay? So G Fermi square is taken out. So here you get all these things. So it is important to notice that you have these contributions which are at the level that people are looking for. In fact, there are some specific models where some interesting things happen. If, for example, the type 2 Cs are dominant, then you see that as you come to the lower regions of the right and left neutrino mass, this thing goes up. The double beta decay gets enhanced over those regions, both for normal as well as inverted hierarchy. So there are all kinds of interesting things happen. I think so the thing to keep in mind is that there are some important lessons that one should learn while discussing neutrinoless double beta decay. One is that observation of neutrinoless double beta decay at the level of 20 to 30 millielectron volt does not mean inverse hierarchy. This point was already discussed, but I want to emphasize it again. It could very easily come from a right-handed W in the TEV range effect. Secondly, suppose long baseline tells you that it is normal hierarchy, then any signal for neutrinoless double beta decay at this level could imply new particle effects, for example, WR. Okay. And finally, of course, we must find ways to disentangle between the heavy particle effects from the neutrino exchange effect, because this can contain really, really important information about new physics and origin of neutrino mass. Okay, so there are a couple of other things which are not directly the focus of this conference, but I think quite important predictions of this model. These are the lepton flavor violating effects, which are signals of TEV scale W. For example, if you look at the standard model, the mu e gamma, even if you have neutrino mass, it is completely negligible, as are the mu 3e and mu 2e. Okay. However, in the left-right model, there are many, many new graphs, two of which I have just shown here. And those contributions are again at the level where you can observe them and look for. So you have to correlate different things and look for this new kind of theory for the neutrino mass. And here is a scatter plot that I borrowed from this paper, which tells you what happens for different parameter range for the WR contribution to mu e gamma correlated with mu 3e and also with mu e. Okay. So these are the different parameter range of the theory. Okay. So the bottom line of this, I don't think you have to understand all of these things, but the bottom line is that it is in the observable range and there is a correlation, so that if you have a point in here, it's quite a nice thing to know about this model. Another process which is of interest is the so-called muonium to antimuonium oscillation, which has been looked for and could be looked for later on in PSI. There is a limit coming from the, so here is the process. You have mu minus coupling to this doubly charged guy, which is a typical particle in this model, and e minus, okay? So you flip them around, you got muonium going to anti-muonium. And the people have looked for this, and the limits are pretty stringent right now, okay? So it's something like 3D Fermi, 10 to the minus 3, and a TeV delta plus doubly charged Higgs boson, you expect effects at this level. Okay, so just want to spend a few minutes, my time is out, but just want to spend a few more minutes before I, two, three more minutes, I think. Okay, I'll take it out of my discussion time. Okay, so the issue is, how do you do leptogenesis in these models? Well, you do the leptogenesis in the standard way, that you have a right-handed neutrino which decays to a lepton and a Higgs, and an anti-lepton and anti-Higgs. And because of CP violation, there is a difference between them. So you get a lepton asymmetry, which through these phalerons get converted to baryon asymmetry. Okay, so that's the standard. So can you do that in a low scale left-right model? The answer is yes, you can do that. And what happens, just to make the long story short, if the baryon to photon ratio, if there is some dilution factor coming from the entropy, and then you have the particle physics factor here, and then you have a thermodynamic factor, which is the efficiency. Okay. And what happens, this particular thing is, there is a quite detailed discussion of this in many papers, but what happens is that if you have a lower WR, this washout factor goes down. So it makes it worse, makes it more difficult to produce the lepton asymmetry. So therefore, you have a lower limit. Okay. Now, there was a paper in 2009 which said it is 18 TeV. We try to improve on that by making some neutrino feeds. This was a generic kind of model, but we made some neutrino feed models and we could find that we could improve it to about 10 TeV. Okay, so what does this say? This says that if you have a discovery of a right-handed W below this mass, then we have ruled out leptogenesis, which is quite significant. And then just finally, one or two slides, that since you have B minus L symmetry, you unify the quarks with leptons, then you have got a new diagram where you can take a neutron to antineutron. And this is, if you look at this diagram, you see that there are right-handed quarks, all of them coming in, and this is delta V equal to 2. Okay, so again, if you have a TV scale seesaw, this is important. And why is this important? This is observable, and why is this important? Well, this is important because if an N bar is observed, then you cannot do leptogenesis in this theory, because whenever you generate matter, this will be completely washed out by the N bar process being in equilibrium. So this is another thing which one has to keep in mind, and possibly there could be some experiments looking for this. Okay, we are trying to contact various places right now. The European Spallational Laboratory in Lund, Sweden, which is under construction, has shown some interest in pursuing this process. Okay. Now, of course, it's a very quick summary. Currently, the limits on the oscillation time is about 10 to the 8 seconds, and one would like to improve it to 10 to the 10 seconds or so, so that one can really touch these kind of theories, which are TEV scale left-right models. Okay, so summary. What I have tried to argue in this lecture is that the origin of neutrino mass could be a TEV scale physics origin. Okay? And if you have in a particular model that I have outlined, has got a right-handed W, has got a Z prime, right-handed neutrino and delta, all of them in the TEV range, and all of them the LHC is looking, and that will be a major breakthrough in the understanding of neutrino mass if any of them are discovered. Okay. And of course, there are other effects which one has to look for, lepton flavor violation, double beta decay, neutron EDM, and so on. And I want to particularly emphasize this leptogenesis bound, because there is even a possibility that we could rule out leptogenesis by seeing any of these signals for a lower than 10 TeVWR. Okay. And finally, these kind of models to provide new impetus for the search for a new baryon violating process, which are anti-neutron going to antineutron, because currently all the focus is on proton decay, and that may have nothing to do with origin of matter. Okay, thank you.
This setup, or what is the dark matter candidate? A neutrino, or can you?
No, right-handed neutrino cannot be dark matter. So people have recently, several groups have realized that in this kind of theories, if you put a fermion triplet, for example, that is absolutely stable, cannot decay. So I didn't have chance to go through it, but there I have some slides on that. So you have to extend the theory. Okay. Now, there are other ways to do dark matter, but not this particular model that I described. Left, right, you can have also different variation where the right-handed neutron is absolutely stable, okay, but not in this version.
I just wonder, are there updates on collider searches for the delta plus plus?
For the WR?
Yeah.
No, the latest that I know is 2 to 3 TeV, 2.8 or 3 TeV. Yeah, there is no. But
not been updated.
But the excitement of 2 TeV is probably disappearing. I don't know, because 13 TeV has no papers on the diboson search. I think there have been some conference reports and so on, probably not very encouraging.
So in the neutron EDM gives a pretty strong bound on the scale, 3 TeV or so.
Right.
So in this four quark operator that you get in these models, it generates a very large CPO nuclear force as well. So
right.
I think if you would take the mercury EDM constraint, maybe you can put this 3 TeV up to 10 TeV or so.
That will be interesting.
But
I think as far as I know, people may have taken mercury, I don't know. And the another EDM that I did not discuss is the electron EDM, which is of course again very much connected to leptogenesis. We are looking at it right now, but I don't have a number to give.
Will the right-handed W and Z thermalize the sterile neutrino N at high temperature scale?
The heavy sterile neutrino, yes, they will.
Okay.
Yes. the
future.
That is, of course, something to look forward to, because then it can. The target will be 30 TeV. If you go to 100 TeV collider that many people are talking about, you could reach a limit on the WR mass up to 30 TeV. No, that's the highest possible in that. I mean, it depends, of course. If it is 100 TeV, you go to 30 TeV. If it is lower, you go lower. Sorry?
There is no target. There's no.
There is no target. I mean, any. Well, I mean, you can look for the origin of mass up to a higher scale. That very generic kind of, because this model cannot predict where the mass of the right hand W is. Okay, that's true. That's a good question. I think if you want to put it into a certain grand unification, there can be some possible limits, but it's kind of a fluid limit. It's not a sharp limit that you can give, because that depends on what kind of extra particles you throw into the theory to bend the couplings as you move up. So. But TeV scale is possible to grand unify, something that I should have emphasized. Yeah.